Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the iPro DADE conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session with instructions following at that time. If anyone requires assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. And now, I would like to turn it over to your host for today's conference, Mr. Darren Triller. Mr. Triller, you may begin.
To spend some time with me. In the interest of time, I'll try and keep things moving along as quickly as possible. And as the operator mentioned, we will have time at the tail end for questions and answers if you should choose to ask some. Okay, so moving on, our first slide regarding disclosure. I just want to remind you that at the end, if you'd like to identify yourself or your organization, you may do so, but you're not required to do so, and that iPro will not divulge your company participation in the program unless you choose to do so. We did circulate earlier in the week a disclosure document that we're hoping that you will consider. We think there are some benefits to publicizing among your peer organizations and perhaps the beneficiaries your participation in the program. So hopefully you will give some thought to that. And if you would please complete that disclosure form and return it to Susan Ulmer at your earliest convenience, we'd greatly appreciate that. So moving on, what I'd like to try to do today is to go over the results of the data analysis we've performed to date, to put before you again some proposed quality measures that we will use perhaps throughout the rest of the DADE project from this point forward, to discuss potential intervention targets and methods, and go over a timeline for the rest of the project so that we're all on the same page. So let's go ahead on to the next slide, and we'll get right into the data analysis part. Just to review what we did so far, we, being iPro, started out by obtaining a master database that could identify all the available drug products. The plans were to be submitting claims data that included NDC numbers to identify the drugs, so we needed a method of identifying the actual drug products from those numbers. We considered the FDA webpage, which has some files available, but they're a bit cumbersome to use, and we ended up using a product available through a company called Multum, but there are others available, such as First Data and Medispan, that are also available. So we're not promoting Multum in any way, shape, or form, but just letting you know that that's what we decided to use for the DADE project so far. Once we acquired that master file, I went ahead and researched the beers list and coded that file, that database, so we could identify which drugs were in fact mentioned in the beers list. We also looked at a pair of HEDIS measures, the first one being an existing measure referred to as the drugs to avoid in the elderly, and we coded the database for those drugs as well. The drugs to avoid in the elderly by NCQA is actually largely based on the beers list itself, so they're very, very similar. The other HEDIS measure that we looked at was a draft measure that was posted on the Internet for public comment this past spring when I started conceiving the DADE project, and it relates to drug-disease interactions in the elderly. And in particular, what we are looking at is the subset of patients that have dementia, and those patients with dementia who are using drugs from tables B and F from that draft measure. My understanding is that that measure has been adopted for 2007 by NCQA. I've not yet seen the published specifications for that, but my understanding is that they are forthcoming. So there may be some minor modifications to this, but I'm working on the assumption that that measure will be intact, largely in its original form come 2007. So we had a master drug data file, we identified drugs of interest based on these three different measures, and then we obtained raw data from many of you plans. And the claims data characterized each prescription drug event. So each dispensed prescription, be it new or refill, would generate a claim, and that's the data that we requested from you. So moving on to the next slide. To date, of the 10 plans participating in DADE, we've successfully received data from 6. I've not yet checked today, but we're hoping to get the data from the other 4 very soon. We're in direct contact with those of you that are still working the bugs out, so we appreciate all those efforts. We're very happy to have the data that we did get. in looking at the data as a whole, it appears that there are no remarkable trends that would be different plan by plan, but I will tell you that one plan had significantly more claims and beneficiaries than the others. So the aggregate results we're going to share with you today are heavily weighted towards that one plan. So we'll keep that in mind. In the future, when you get your individualized reports, you will get your own results and also comparisons to the aggregate group data. But for right now, it is the pooled data that we have for everybody. We did encounter some problems, not any huge problems, but some speed bumps along the way. Some of the plans submitted data files that were missing certain fields, such as the date of birth or the beneficiary enrollment date information. We had some trouble with Excel formats, and some of the data that came through included claims that were outside of that first quarter that we were interested in. So as we are continuing to refine our analysis of the data, we will work these things out, and the ultimate reports you get will have as many of the problems taken care of as possible. But for right now, the data I'm sharing with you today, a lot of these factors are still included. So we'll have to take that with a grain of salt for the time being. So moving onward, what did we get? We ended up receiving data on 120,000 unique beneficiaries from all the six plans, and that constituted over 1 million prescription drug events. So we're very pleased with the size sample that we received. When we received the raw data, we tried to identify the drug names for each and every claim that was submitted, and we found that well over 99% of the time we were able to identify those. In the future, for our subsequent analyses, we will actually hunt down those other 0.6% and make sure that those are not drugs that are either still commercially available and not in our database, or whether they're just stray numbers or erroneous claims. So we're very pleased with the quality of the match that we have so far using that Multnom data file, but we're actually going to try and make it a little bit better. We trended the data by month as well as doing it en masse, and there did not seem to be any real trends in prescribing over those months. Again, it's the first quarter of events for the plan, so we expect the data to go through some gyrations over the next year or so as the processes become better worked out and things. But as it stands right now, we didn't see any trends across months that stuck out. So moving on to the next slide, the beneficiaries were predominantly female, average age of about 74 years old. It appeared that about 40% of prescriptions were refills, and about 59% new prescriptions. That figure may change with time because included in those new prescriptions might possibly be refilled prescriptions that only for the first time were billed to Part D. So the proportion of scripts that are refills may actually change as we get further into the availability of the drug benefit. Moving on to the next slide, as we looked at the breakdown of number of prescriptions per beneficiary, I personally was a little surprised at the distribution of number of prescriptions per beneficiary. My assumption from clinical practice in the home care environment was that people would be on far more prescriptions than is reflected here. What you'll see is that about 70% of the beneficiaries had 10 or fewer claims submitted over the first 3 months of the year. So it was much lower than I thought, but again, there are subsets of the population that received many, many prescriptions during that period. So over 1,000 patients, for example, had 41 or more claims in a 90-day period. So that's there is a set of patients out there that are very high drug users. Moving on to the next slide, when we broke that same information down by the top 10 numbers of claims filled, so this is the percentage of patients who got one or two or three different prescriptions during that period. A large proportion only got one, two, three, or four prescriptions, and that accounts for the 70% that we saw in the earlier slide. So there are a number of beneficiaries, a large number of them out there that at least in this first quarter had very few claims, but again, there were a large proportion of patients who had multiple prescriptions. Moving on, we tried to distinguish the types of prescriptions, the way the patients were using the drugs. And by looking at the day's supply, we assume that patients are getting 29 days or fewer day supply, are using the drugs on an as-needed basis, That accounted for about 17% of the claims, but the vast majority of the prescription claims are for chronic medications. Moving on to the next slide. What we then did after we pulled all the data together and cleaned it up was to basically look for the Beers meds and those the prevalence of those other HEDIS measures. And so when we looked at the Beers medications, we found nearly 30,000 beneficiaries who received at least one prescription for one of those Beers medications. That's a quarter of the population, so it's very high. It's actually quite similar. It's right in the middle of the range of what I've seen in other literature from other states, from other healthcare settings. So even though the Beers list has been out a number of years and has actually been revised several times, these drugs are still frequently used in the outpatient environment. The inappropriate medications under the Beers list accounted for almost 6% of the claims filed to you plans via Part D. The most common agents, I didn't include them in the slide set because we were still working on it, but they were the typical ones that we would anticipate seeing, drugs like the tricyclic antidepressants, such as amitriptyline, meclizine, hydroxyzine, a lot of these older antihistamine, anticholinergic-type drugs that have been shown in nursing home settings and other places to increase risk of falls, to impair cognition, and to have many other side effects that make them inappropriate in the elderly. Moving ahead on the next slide, the breakdown of number of Beers dispensings per beneficiary. So this is not the number of unique drugs, but rather the number of claims that beneficiaries submitted in that first quarter. And as you will see, 75% did not have any, but there are patients out there who are receiving 3, 4, or 5 different claims for those drugs in only a 3-month period. So again, reflects how common these agents are out there in the public. Moving on to the drugs to avoid in the elderly, the HEDIS measure, again, this measure was built largely on the Beers list. It's a little more exclusive, so it's a shorter list of drugs, but the numbers are very similar in that over 10% of the patients received at least one prescription for these agents, and again, they accounted for a substantial portion of the drugs that the plans and Medicare are paying for, so it continues to be a problem. Moving on to the next slide, once again, there are patients out there with 3, 4, or 5 different claims in a 3-month period for these potentially inappropriate drugs. Moving onward, the next measure, that new draft measure from NCQA, is a little more complicated, so I'm going to have to walk you through it. It's actually looking at the combination of two things. It's looking at the patients who have dementia, and in those patients who are identified as having dementia, what proportion of them are receiving anticholinergic drugs. The reason we're interested in the anticholinergic drugs in these folks is that the drugs that we use to treat dementia increase acetylcholine, and these anticholinergic drugs actually do just the opposite. So these anticholinergic drugs can induce symptoms of delirium, can perhaps worsen dementia, and act in just the opposite way of the drugs you're paying to treat the dementia. So what we found is that there were 13,000 beneficiaries who received prescriptions for the drugs listed in tables B and F in the measure by NCQA. Those are anticholinergic drugs. So there's 13,000 beneficiaries who got prescriptions for the drugs listed as anticholinergic by NCQA. And there were about 3,500 beneficiaries who received dementia drugs, or about 3% of your population. Going on to the next slide, we put these together to calculate the rate of use of anticholinergic drugs in the dementia population. And what we found is that approximately 18% of the patients who are receiving drugs to increase acetylcholine to treat their dementias are also receiving drugs that do exactly the opposite. Interestingly, the rate of use of anticholinergic drugs in the general population from this data is only about 10%. So your dementia patients are actually almost twice the risk of using anticholinergic drugs. So that appears to me to be very significant and is actually substantiates my whole idea behind developing this DAID project. If you consider that number, there's a couple different ways of looking at it, that the use of these anticholinergic drugs is substantially higher among the patients treated for dementia than those that are not. There's a couple different reasons. The anticholinergic drugs might be causing the delirium and the dementia, and that the prescribers are using the dementia drugs to treat what they think is perhaps Alzheimer's disease, when in fact what they're treating are the symptoms or adverse reactions to another drug. The alternative might be that the dementia drugs that they are using in patients who do have Alzheimer's disease are causing symptoms such as gastrointestinal problems and other side effects that the anticholinergic drugs are being used for. So it could be either way. It could be a combination of both. Moving on to the next slide, either way, the dementia patients really stick out as a subset of high anticholinergic users, and they lend themselves to an intervention such as the DATE initiative for a number of different reasons. As we've discussed previously, the anticholinergic drugs on these lists, many of them are already on the list of drugs that are inappropriate for use in seniors, period, regardless of their dementia. These drugs, when used in patients with dementia, make those symptoms worse, and they do not have compelling indications otherwise. These drugs aren't remarkably effective for treating other disease states to begin with, and in a lot of cases, such as the antidepressants, there's newer, better agents that should be used. Patients and caregivers, I imagine, would be very interested to learn that if they have a loved one or are suffering themselves from dementia, I believe they'd be interested to know that they have a 1 in 5 chance of taking a drug that interacts and that might be harming or at least impairing their ability to do well on the drugs. The literature base and the medical literature is growing. There's more and more evidence month by month suggesting that these drugs are in fact harmful. And again, NCQA is already developing measures to address these. So if we pursue the DATE initiative, I think we have a number of good reasons for why we're doing what we're doing. So the data appear to support moving forward with the DATE project as a clinically relevant QI program. So moving forward onto the next page. This slide is exactly the same as it was in our previous teleconference, if you were there, where we proposed several quality measures to be used for the DATE project. And I haven't really changed them at all, because the data seems to support everything that we had considered months ago. The first measure would be the proportion of medications dispensed that are potentially inappropriate anticholinergics. And the second one is the proportion of beneficiaries who are receiving one or more of those potentially avoidable drugs. The third one would parallel the HEDIS measure, the draft measure, and would look at the proportion of the beneficiaries who have dementia and also are receiving the anticholinergic drugs. So I believe, and I would appreciate your input on these, but I believe that we could be pretty confident moving forward with the measures that we've proposed. Now, the next step, the thing that we need to do is consider what are we going to do as far as intervening and how are we going to go about it. So what are the targets for intervention going to be? One target would be internally, at your plan level itself. Could we address your formulary committees and discuss the possibility of either prior authorization or tiered access to some of these inappropriate drugs in the seniors? Or might you already have medication therapy management programs under development that could possibly address this issue? Could we identify individual prescribers that are outliers, that are prescribing a high prevalence of these drugs, and perhaps develop office-based interventions or directly contact these physicians somehow to try and influence their prescribing patterns? As an aside, we did not yet break down the data by the number of inappropriate prescriptions per prescriber, but we will be doing that in the near future so we can get an idea of whether there are some outliers there that can be identified. Moving on, other targets might be the high-risk beneficiaries themselves. If we singled out or identified patients who are on multiple anticholinergic drugs, perhaps they'd be a good group to address directly somehow through the plans. How about the subset of patients who have that documented dementia and anticholinergic interaction? They, again, I believe would be a very responsive population, knowing the importance of their medical treatment. And how would we go about doing that? Would it be a mailing through you plans? Could we do something as out of the box as simply doing direct-to-consumer advertising with a radio ad in your area, identifying the types of interactions we're talking about and suggesting that they contact their pharmacy or the plan or their physician or perhaps iPro? So I'd like you to start thinking about how you see us best influencing prescribing for your beneficiaries. And then the pharmacies themselves. Pharmacists in New York State are required to obtain a certain amount of live continuing education each year, and iPro would be very open to performing education programs for those pharmacists. But might there be, beyond that, additional ways to get pharmacies involved? Perhaps you have preferred chain pharmacies that dispense your products or are working closely on your medication therapy management programs with a certain group of pharmacies. Perhaps they might also be able to help us influence prescribing patterns. So there's a number of ways we can approach these things, and I'm hoping to glean from you what you believe would be the most effective, what works with your organization's timeline and resources the best, so that we can be as effective as possible. Moving on to the next slide. Short-term timeline has been modified a bit since the last time. I was unexpectedly out of the office for a number of weeks, and then summer hit, and a number of you were away, and we also ran into some speed bumps with trying to get data transferred and things. So there's been a few minor changes, but I think overall we're right on target. What I'm hoping to do in the near term is to receive comments from you based on this teleconference and the data we've analyzed so far. I'm going to be following up early next week with an email survey to you and ask you to answer back by the 11th of August so that we can make some decisions on how to move forward. For you plans that have not yet successfully transferred your data, we've been pretty flexible so far because we didn't have a hard deadline staring us in the face, but we actually do have reports and things that are due to CMS by the end of this month. So I would ask that you please do everything you can to get your data transferred to us by August 18th. That will allow us enough time to include it in our baseline reports to CMS and also in the individualized reports that we're going to be developing for each of you plans. We hope to this fall in September, October be developing the intervention materials and then moving forward to start implementing the interventions in November. Moving on, the long-term timeline is exactly the same as it was before. Again, I think we're within a couple weeks of being exactly on our original schedule with serial data analysis throughout the period and interim reports and other things to CMS as we go ahead. So moving forward, August 18th, again, is a hard deadline for the data transfer. If you are unable to get it to us by the 18th, it doesn't mean that we won't analyze it for you. It just means it won't find its way into that initial report, and it's just going to mean you're not going to get your individualized report probably into September sometime. As I said, there are some blemishes to the analysis we've done so far, and we're refining things as we go. The final baseline analysis that we will provide to you by the end of this month will receive all of the data and we've received to date. We're going to refine our methods a bit further. We'll try and distinguish between PRN and chronic use of the individual agents. That should be helpful as we develop the interventions because we'll know which drugs are being used and also have an idea as to how they're using them. We're going to identify the anticholinergic drugs most commonly used in those dementia folks, again, to guide any interventions we come up with. We'll perform statistical comparisons between your own data and the aggregate data for the rest of the group. We'll give you charts that trend the prescribing patterns by month. And again, we're going to try and hammer down and show if there are, in fact, prescribers that are outliers as far as the prevalence of use of these drugs. If you have additional items you would like to see us include in your reports, please share them with us. So moving on, what I'd like to do with you now, I've got several slides, and we're almost done. There's two or three slides left. And what I'd like to do is pose some questions to you. These will be very similar to the questions you'll receive in the survey early next week, but please feel free. I will ask the operator after each question to open up the line so that you can perhaps pose the questions now to the group if you would like. But either way, I would enjoy hearing feedback on these questions from the survey by the end of next week from all of you. So the first question I would pose to you is, are the proposed quality measures still acceptable to you? And I'd ask the operator, please open the lines at this time for that question.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to answer the question, please press the number one key on your touchtone telephone.
Okay, with no responses, I'll try the next question. We'll move on to the next question. What are your opinions of the proposed targets for intervention? And this might be one of the most important questions that we have at this point because developing the intervention is going to be the key to the rest of the program. So if anyone has any questions or comments at this point, please go ahead and pose them.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment, please press the number one key. Our first question or comment is from line 794. Your line is open.
Hi, Darren.
Hello.
Hi, this is Leah. How are you? Leah and Eileen from Fidelis.
Oh, hi. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. I actually have a couple of comments regarding the potential targets on interventions.
Right.
We may have a difficulty with the drug formula-related interventions for a very simple reason that we don't control it. It's our PBM's formulary that we're using for Medicare. So in terms of prior authorization, tiered access, and a clinical follow-up or MTM, it's really hard to establish because they are the ones who do the MTM for us, and that was the MTM that was submitted to CMS and approved. In terms of the prior authorization and tiered access, again, it's their committee that does make all the decisions, and we are not really involved, nor can we really, even if we do suggest, it's really up to them whether or not they want to take it. So we don't really have control over that. So for us, drug formulary interventions wouldn't be the best thing.
Okay.
As it relates to high-level prescribers, I think we would have a better luck with that as opposed to having any kind of success with drug formularies.
Can I ID the subscribers?
You'll be able to ID the subscribers, correct, for us, for our reporting?
Yes.
Yeah, so if IPA will develop some kind of educational materials or some kind of a target program for them, we are actually lucky in the way that the majority of our Medicare program is upstate and is localized to only a few counties. So we'd be able to probably target those physicians because our provider network is relatively small. And in terms of high-risk beneficiaries, I actually would think that that would work with us as well. Though, of course, as you know, if they have dementia, it's kind of hard to make them understand what you want them to get. So a lot of reliance will be on the caregivers and whether or not they're versed in drugs and understand the issues and the repercussions, I guess. But I think with the high-risk beneficiaries, if we can develop some kind of materials or some kind of outreach that would be standardized, which we can do with our case management staff, we could do that as well. In terms of dispensing pharmacies, we don't have any of the dedicated dispensing pharmacies, so it's kind of hard to do that. So I think our biggest bank in the buck would be the high-level prescribers and possibly high-risk beneficiaries.
Let me ask you something, Darren. This is Eileen.
Sure.
With regard to the fact that Leah has just presented that we have to work through our vendor who provides the pharmacy component of it or the formulary for it. Have we elicited any kind of buy-in from them to work on this with us?
From the PBMs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've not made any overtures to them, but that's the type of information that's going to be extremely helpful to us, and I wouldn't be adverse to doing that. The reason I was leaning towards the formulary level is that even if it takes more time, to actually go through, let's say, an entire process, even if we have to go through the PBMs and even if they have to get approval through CMS to make the changes, the downstream implications of making those changes, I think, is going to affect a lot more beneficiaries.
Yeah, because they are the ones, they're the ones that are interfacing right then and there at the time of the dispensing.
Right.
For the medication. They're the ones who can say, have a warning flash, say, look, this person's on this, and this. And, again, these are the ones that can identify the fact right up at the front. And even if we just asked one or two to get involved and do a pilot with them, you've got some level of buy-in and, in essence, what you're trying to do is improve the care. So,
right.
Here's the thing, Darren. With Caremark, they have their SilverScript formulary, and it's not just for Fidelis. It's for every single Medicare plan out there that has bought into their formulary and is using their formulary and services. So if they are to change that, then it will be changed for all of the plans. And that's why it's an issue, because they're not just going to change it based on what we're telling them, because it will change it for all of them.
Okay.
So if you get a buy-in from them, then you won't just affect our plan. You'll affect the majority of the plans that use their formulary for MAPD.
That's fantastic. That's great information. Like I said, it may be more effort and take more time, but it might be worth it down the road and have some real far-reaching implications.
So I think you'd be able to implement a lot more access to the member and control if you get the buy-in at that level.
Okay. Wonderful. I appreciate that very, very much. And if you have any other thoughts along those lines, please include them in the survey I'm going to send you early next week, if you could.
Okay.
All right. Is there anything else, you guys, from the opinions on the targets or the methods?
And once again, if you have a comment, please press the number one key. We have a follow-up from...
referring to tables with the drugs. We don't have them in our presentation that I printed out.
I'm sorry? Could you repeat that for me?
The tables that you were referring to, like you were saying, look at table B, table F, whatever.
Okay, those are not included in the handout. Those are the tables that are in the draft measure from NCQA. If you'd like a copy of that, please just shoot me an email, and I will get it right back to you so you can see the actual draft measure.
Can you actually just send it to your Fidelis contact?
Sure.
Great.
You want that to go to Fidelis?
Yeah, well, it would be myself, Eileen, and Lisa.
Okay.
Great. That would be wonderful. Thank you. Because you guys keep on. And also, if you do have a beers list handy somewhere and could email that to us, that would be great.
All right. I can do that.
Thank you. I mean, I just don't want to go search for it. Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's what we're here for. So please, don't be shy. Don't be shy. Anything else regarding targets and the proposed methods of intervention?
The only thing is the date, which is the 18th.
Yes.
The baseline. What do you mean by baseline? Are you talking about the first quarter, second quarter?
Quarter. I'm referring to the first quarter data. We've received data transfers from 6 of the 10 plans, and I want to be able to do a final baseline analysis on as many of the plans as we can. I've got to report those figures to CMS and also want to get the reports back to each individual plan in a timely manner. So I'm trying to make sure that I get the data from everybody that can get it to me by the 18th.
Did we get it to you?
Is this Fidelis again?
Yeah.
I believe so. I believe so.
Well, the reason we're saying is that the person that was involved in the transition has gone on vacation, and we didn't get to sign off on it at the last second. So.
Yes, yours came through.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're in the clear.
I knew she was working on it diligently to get it out before we left.
So then we don't owe you anything by the 18th, right?
No. Just the plans that that have not yet transferred their information.
Okay. Thanks, Darren.
Wonderful. Thank you. All right. With no other questions or comments on proposed targets or methods, I'm going to move on to the next slide. And I guess we just touched on it indirectly. Is the timeline realistic for getting us the data and for moving forward with the interventions and things? Really, the timeline is the tightest for us on our end. And once you've gotten the data, just as it was mentioned, the pressure is pretty much off you for the time being. But I will pose the question, is our timeline realistic? Is it going to work with what you've got going on at your plant? All right, with no comments. Moving on to the next question, and this relates to subsequent data.